That was a good...
Your cow just had a calf?
Yeah. Aye, aye. This man's still doing the farming, even though he doesn't own it or anything, and the man that owns it doesn't do anything with it, so he's happy enough.
I'm left with a few cows and that's it.
Good luck. Good luck. Good luck.
Bring a block of footballers when you're coming in.
I will. I will. I will indeed, yeah. Oni Doonan, it's lovely to be here again, you know, and so you were born in 1932.
Yeah.
And were you born here in this house?
I was born in Kinnaly, and across about 2 miles from the border on the northern side, and went to Slieve Russell School. That's how the hotel got its name, you know.
Oh, yes.
Slieve Russell.
And so what was it like growing up in the late 30s and 40s?
Oh, sure, it was... You couldn't imagine. I can't be trying to tell the youngsters now what it was like. But sure, it was the donkey and cart and the horses, and there was no car or nothing. And like, you were this wee small mountain farm, and you kept 6 cows, and you had them tied in the byre, tied by the heads, and you had one horse, and the horse was in the stable, and the horse was very important for... You had to depend on them to do the whole work and go to mass on a Sunday on the horse and trap, you know. And it took the place of, there was no such thing as tractors or cars or anything that him.
And electricity and
no
telephone.
Electricity, there was no running water, no telephone. You couldn't imagine what it was like that him, you know.
Yeah.
But we were happy enough. Like, we never had money, but we never wanted, you know... You just got used to doing without, you know.
So you were brought up at the other side of the border.
Yeah,
So what was the name of the place again?
In Kinnaly.
In Kinnaly.
Well, aye. Well,
yeah.
Sermat was the townland, Sermat Kinnaly.
And did you feel different living there then?
No, we didn't feel... As you see, we all the time went to mass and everything across the border on this side in Swallenbaa, you know. But you did feel different now. It was an awful... Even... You know, just Catholics didn't get jobs, you know. But there wouldn't be that many jobs, but if the postman's job came up or anything. And the postman was doing our area for years and years, and then his son was doing it when he was got ill health. But when the father died, the job went up, and there was an ex-serviceman brought from 30 miles away to do the job, you know. No Catholic got a job of any consequence at all. And we were in a... There wasn't a Protestant in our area within 3 miles of us, you know. We were all a Catholic area. But when it come to voting, you had to watch your register so that your name wouldn't be crossed off when you go to vote. It could be crossed off, you know. You always had to watch the register to make sure you were on the register. Because, see, the way County Fermanagh is divided up, the whole Catholic area is here, and the poor area along the border, along Cavan border. And then the rich part of it is down north of Inniskillen. And they had two... The whole area was only electing one, because they knew we were going to put in a Catholic man, and this was in the Belfast Parliament. Well, it was divided in two. The other side, well, where they put in two unionists, you know.
Yeah.
It was called gerrymandering, that him, you know. They put the whole Catholics into one area, and we could elect two, but, you know, we had enough votes for two, but one is always representing the area, whereas they could always put two, so it was always two against one anyway, you know.
I see.
That's the way it was worked.
And but if you, like you say, there wasn't a Protestant farmer living within miles of you here.
No.
Yeah. But that was as well, because the quality of the land mightn't have been great.
No, it was just the whole poor land is up on along the cabin border, you know.
Oh, and what was your father doing? He was farming there as well.
He was farming. And, of course, there was 9 of us. And it was hard now.
Yeah. And were you, then when you went to school and you finished school, did you take over the farm from you?
No, I was the second youngest in nine. And there wouldn't be money to send you on to secondary school or anything. And it was just late because it came in then, education came in and there came a bus service that would take you to Inniskillen to the secondary school. But I was just about 2 years too old for that. The ones that came after me all got secondary education because they could go on the bus to Inniskillen, you know.
Yeah.
But before that, unless you were prepared to go to a boarding school, to see, you would get no secondary education. So my father was, he was part-time builder, he could do anything. He used to, that time he had to kill the pigs and send them away dead, and he was a butcher, and he was a vet, and he was everything, but he got a few bob here and there.
And I suppose a bit of smuggling went on too.
The smuggling was a racket on its own, of course. You came up here, we weren't too badly off down there, because the war was on, and there was money, eggs was dear, and you could sell an old hen and get a good price from it. Everything was dear. But up here, so they hadn't a bit to eat though. That was the time the cattle, the tariff was on the cattle, and the cattle were so poor, price was so poor. And they came, you know, when my father had have a couple of calves for sale or a couple of yearlings, he'd go to Derlin Fair and he'd sell them. But he'd come back up here then, and if he had a red one and a white one sold, he could buy a red one and a white one up here because he'd be checked. It was the police was checking them. They come out of the house and they seen you with a red one and a white one.
Yeah.
If you sold them, you'd still have to get a red one and a white one. Because they'd come back and check again, and it was the police used to do it.
Yeah. And they obviously had local knowledge. They knew everybody, didn't they?
They knew everybody.
Yeah.
Police. And then, of course, the police was, they knew, they had clients, and my brother had a wee shop, and all the people, he had a little shop in Northern Ireland, and there was no white bread, or there was everything. I suppose there was, I often say, the bread man used to come about three times a week, and he could bring several dozen bread with him, you know.
Yeah.
And it all went across the border, because there was no bread up here. People within 3 miles walked down on the butter, just a bag, it was a white loaf, the butter bag, a bag of bread with them. And it was big families here, and so they had to be fed.
And then, of course, you came south, didn't you? Then?
Yeah.
And tell me that. I mean, you set up a farm here, did you?
No, this was, my wife had this farm here.
Oh, you married in here?
Yeah. There were five girls, and they went to America.
And what was your wife's
Keenan.
Name?
Keenan.
What was her first name?
She was Etta Keenan. And she remained on. Well, the father died when he was 53. And
that was very young, yeah, wasn't it?
He died. He just took a hernia and he died. He was dead when they got out the ambulance, but he was dead when he got to the hospital.
Yeah. And then
You see the other one, they went to America, and she was on her own here with the mother, you know.
And so when you took over the farm,
She worked in a chemist shop in Schwanenbar.
Yeah.
And I happened to be working with a man in Schwanenbar too. That's how we met.
Oh, I see. How many years ago?
Well, let's see. It'll be 1957.
Yeah. So they were times which you saw no real troubles in the north.
When I used to say, of course, the place was small here and we'd only five or six cows. I kept working away at the building trade, and my business was down in Northern Ireland, and it was across the border every day. See, the people don't realise that the first trouble started here in 1956 and the roads were blown up that time. And that was the time your man was shot in Brookborough, if you remember. He was a Limerick man, you know.
Yeah.
And O'Hanlon and Sean South. The South was from Limerick. And then the things died down then, and it didn't start again until, well, it was 68 again then when the trouble really started. And when I'd be going down there, they blew up the whole roads and crowd to get out of asunder and close them back in again. They'd come and they'd blow them up twice as deep the next time. And all you had to do was a big, big hole of water, you know, where the road should be. And you could walk by, or if you had a bicycle, you'd have to carry it by the feet, go into the field and go by. But I had a car and I used to go down. And they built a big fortification down on the border at Swad there, where the army dug in. And you had to wait till you could go down there and they could sit inside and see you there, and they wouldn't come out to check you.
Yeah.
Just to try to annoy you. And then they'd come out, there could be six cars, and they'd come out, and the first thing was your date of birth, where you were going, where you were coming from, everything like that. Sometimes they'd frisk you down, you know. And they were looking for that certain names that they were looking for. And if you happened to be one of them names, you'd be quizzed far more. And I seen a fella, a girl used to walk in a skin, and I'd offer give her a lift down the road a bit of the way. And I knew she was Riley, or old Riley. But when she came to the checkpoint, she said she was Jones. And you'd be sweating in case they'd find out.
And why did she give an incorrect name?
Because she was involved with the provost and this side, you know. She could be one of them, you know. And they had the names, you know, they had the whole names down there that they were looking for. They were just watching for them to come down.
Okay, so I mean, they were living all around you. If you were a member of the IRA, there was support for the IRA.
Oh, there was.
You knew them, they were local.
They were your neighbours.
Yeah.
They'd come out from the checkpoint, you could get a black man or a coloured man, and he'd come out to quiz you, you know, and you just... The fellow that was along with me, he said, "Isn't it a sight that a man from Africa will go over here and ask you where you're going in your own country?" And he said, "If you were over in Africa, them boys could eat you over there." Going several days, I'd go down there and I had a couple of men walking, or I had a state car, and I could throw three or four bags of cement and pick them up walking. And when I'd go down, you had a big detour to get down through Kinnaly. And when you were going down there, and whether they had cameras or something, they could see you and they would know you had a load in the car. They could see the car down. And they'd come after you in two jeeps and the sirens on and flag you down. And one jeep would go up the road about 50 yards, two fellas would lip out and two rifles pointed straight into your face. And I'm telling you, you'd want to be careful what you'd say. The other boys had come up then. They had you covered. The other ones had come up from behind, you see. Go through, you keep you for an hour and let you go then.
Imagine that. And every time you had to take a long detour, as
we had to go from... Forth. It's only 2 miles across. If we could go... But the roads were blown up that time. You couldn't go through unless with a bicycle.
Were you threatened at any stage? Were you told, you know, that was the house a safe house? Was it a house for keeping?
No, we kept clear now of anything at all like that. And when you went down there, you answered as truthfully as ever you could, you know.
Yeah.
Because you didn't want to. And I don't know, but Thomas, that fellow's gone out now.
Your son?
Another young lad was going to the Tekinborn, and he was pally with a fella that was into clay pigeon shooting. And sure, he got the loan of one of these belts, Catholic belts that you have, and he threw it in the boot of the car. And your man was going to walk and open up the boot of the car and see the Catholic belt. And they asked him, "Can you explain what this was?" And he didn't know it was there. And he said, "I didn't know anything about it." That left him twice as guilty, you know. So they called out the police and from nearby down the road to Nolly Barrack.
Yeah.
And they let the police deal with him. But then he got away on condition that he reported to the barrack every day. So after 3 or 4 days, the sergeant in the barrack said, "I don't be bothered coming back."
Yeah.
Simple things like that that yet, you know.
Yeah.
That you had,
but you were living in that because I suppose you were working in the north, as you say, and yeah. you were going back and forth every single yeah. day, and that must have, and even though they knew you from passing, they'd still stop you, would they?
And several times coming up in the evening, coming from work, I was only about 100 yards away from the border when the explosion goes off. They were after putting a bomb in the customer or something, and the big smoke go up, and we'd stop on the road. We're afraid to go back on, but the good point about an explosion like that was the army never came out for a good half hour after the explosion because they were afraid of booby traps, you know. That yeah. they got caught a few times like that. They had a booby trap set for them to bring them out, you know.
Of course, yeah.
So we knew that we had half an hour to get away anyway. So we had to go back down on the way up and out 10, 15 miles to get through Ballyconnell and get back here. Because if you got on the scene, you'd be held up and checked and questioned and maybe taken in. And
yeah, and it, so you were in the middle of all of this.
Yeah.
Like you were very much part of it. And then on one side, you had the Republicans coming up from the south. And then did you notice strangers coming from the south and kind of being up here at that time, because they were
here,
and
but there was you were afraid now to, if you seen them, to say you seen them early, because there was a fella living down there and he may have been talking too much in the pub, but so the tailor of Poland tarred and feathered him, you know, and he's alive yet.
Because he was an informer, is
well, the, yeah, he'd have a few drinks and he'd be talking about what he's seen, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And there was always that danger then, you know.
You just had to keep quiet and not get involved with either side, you know, because that's the way it was.
And you managed to do that.
Oh, aye. When you were going every day, you had to look. And I mean, working down, and I went into the Skillon on a message, and I was just down at what was the Lakeland Farm at the Skillon. I parked the car and I wasn't going home. I was going 10 minutes and I heard a bang, and I went back and I seen a smoke where my car was. And I went back and I went back to the car, and there was a door of a, apparently they left the car with a bomb in it, and the door of the car was hanging on a branch over my car. So I knew then I'd have time to get away, so I jumped into the car and headed back home as quick as I could before the army come out, you know.
Because you knew that you had that half hour to get home. Oh, that's amazing. And that bomb went off right beside your car.
And it was lucky enough, there was nothing, but it blew the door of the car up and it was hanging on a branch just ready to fall on me. Yeah.
So that bomb was being taken somewhere but never got to the place it was supposed to go. But there were a lot of bombs planted, you know, up here in Swanling, as well as down in Ballyconnell.
There was a young fella that I played football with. He was taking out a bomb, and he was just blown to bits.
Mm.
He has a brother, a solicitor there, and he's McManus.
Yeah.
And he there were safe houses up here where they could make bombs and things, but he was taking this. He called a taxi to take the bomb down to the Swanland Bar customer. And he had the bomb hidden behind the ditch, and he was just stepping out on the road when the bomb went off. And he was blown to bits.
Yeah.
And it was the summer time, and people was mowing the meadows, and they got pieces of his arms and legs and things in the meadows in the month after, you know.
But he was going to take that bomb.
He was taking the bomb, he was carrying it just like that.
Yeah.
And he was stepping across the ditch, Oh, there was a monument up there on the road where he was killed.
But that man that was taking that bomb was going to plant.
He was a Northern Ireland man, and he was on the run from Northern Ireland. He was staying in safe houses up here.
Yeah.
And I played football with him in Northern Ireland, in McManus.
Yeah, imagine, yeah. And yet there was that support for these people, you know, that...
There was what they call Sinn Féin dances in the local hall there, and we went to them. I went to them myself. Yeah. He just went to the dances, and that was it. The dances to raise funds, you know.
And were you... I mean... Did you see the Protestants then as kind of the enemy and that they were the other side?
The Protestants were suspicious of all Catholics, you know. They'd be, you know, they wouldn't trust Catholics very far. Of course, there was the thing is, there was an awful lot of bomb. The chapel in Swannanbow was blown away with a bomb, you know.
Yeah.
And the hardware place was... About three, the school was bombed. There was an awful lot of bombing done there in Swannanbow, you know. But they came up from the UDR, whoever done it, came up from the north. And
yeah, I know, and planted those bombs. And as I look out your window here, I'm looking at the north, even, you know, you're so close here.
Yeah,
It's amazing, and it's just that 30 years of continuous...
Yeah. See, it was 30 years, and you got too used to it, you didn't pass much remarks, you know. That was the way it was. It was the best part of your life, you got, in the trouble, you know.
Yeah. And were you living in that fear, you know, that somebody would come up to your door and was there that tension all the time?
There was that fear that it could come from either side. You know, that's what I felt anyway. When you wouldn't be supporting your own side too much, you know, you had to have it balanced anyway.
Yeah, you had to try and be in the middle somewhere.
You could end up getting tired and feathered, maybe. It was that kind of a system, you know.
Do you think that they had a good organisation, the IRA? Do you think
they had a good organisation, and they had, then instead of blowing up the roads, they put Ayres and girders 5 foot high, about 3 foot apart, right across the road, that you could walk through with a bicycle. But the boys came along with some kind of a little bomb, and they put it to the girder, and it just cut it off the same as you could at the road level. You had no bother driving across then.
So they had all these tricks, I suppose, to do these things.
Aggravate them.
Yeah.
And there was one section, there's a river at home, and it cuts off about 5 town lands. It cuts off from Fermanagh to Cavan, you know. It comes round in a bulge like that.
What's the name of the river?
It's a small little river.
Yeah.
It flows into the Swad River. But there was two bridges on it. And they came along and they blew up the two bridges, our side boys, and said they were going to take these town lands. Well, the army was out with two Bailey bridges the next day and had them right across it. So things like that.
So they were annoying each other.
And
then, of course, you had the digger, passageways and roads.
Yeah, yeah. There's an old digger down there yet on the border.
Yeah.
And that that's Brinder Sunder filling it in.
Yeah.
But they'd just come and they'd blow it twice as deep the next time, you know.
Yeah. And did you have any member, none of your family were shot at or
No, but they were fairly, my brother that was living in the home place, the provost went down and he had a car and a tractor and a jeep, and they just kept him prisoner in his own house, him and his wife.
What was your brother's name?
John. And they took They took the tractor and trailer with, and a bomb. They took it down to Ginolly Barrack. They took the jeep and put it across the road to block the road to keep the army from coming out. And then they took the car to make the getaway home back up here. And they had him in the house under arrest, and one fellow stayed with, straight at him till he heard the bomb going off, and then he disappeared. So he was out a car, a tractor and trailer, and he had a pickup jeep, and he was out the mall. The all was desolated, you know.
But he was also kidnapped. Like, kidnapped, he was held in his own house with his wife.
And the wife was a teacher.
Yeah.
And she said, I taught some of you boys at school.
She knew them.
She knew them. She was, and now she was shocked for a long time after it, you know.
Yeah.
There was a, up on the top of the hill, there was a car, you know, the car radio mast. And they took a bomb up to there with the pickup jeep to blow up the mast that the army couldn't, you know, the army was there, so they were getting their information, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah, and explain that again now.
There was a high hill away from his place, and there were the mast for the car phones.
It's still
in use. Yeah. But they were using it for the army purposes, you see. So the boys got under the wing of that, and they went up and blew it up first. And then they sent the tractor and trailer to load with a bomb to the barrack.
Yeah.
Parked it in the... And then they had the car to get away.
And were they ever caught? Were they?
Oh, no, they never were caught, no.
And they were local lads?
Oh, of course they were local.
Yeah. And so, but with the intelligence then, they kind of knew...
The army, or the Northern UDR and the army, they had a list of names that they were looking for all the time. That's why they were checking everybody.
Yeah.
And yeah. Another thing, my brother lived, he lives down between Swanland Bar and the Northern border, and he's only about 100 yards off the border, and he was living there. And the IRA had come down there, and they put up things in his shed, you know. He couldn't say anything about them. And the often fellas that was down, when there'd be a fire going on at the border, often a lad, he'd be wounded, he'd make his way back to his house. And someone would come there and pick him up to bring him to the doctor in Ballinamore.
Was this the same brother now that was...
No, another brother.
And what was his name?
He was Pat. He was the eldest.
Imagine. And just because his house was in the right place, just 100 yards from the border.
And the guards would come down maybe 3 times a night and turn on a street, see what was going on. And maybe the boys would be coming up through the fields from the north, see what there'd be anyone about, you know. He was in the middle of it anyway.
He was. And they stored their ammunition and
they
guns
could,
there.
They could come there and use a shed for whatever they wanted, because he couldn't very well object to it.
Yeah. He couldn't, he had no power. He couldn't tell him go away.
No. He said
But that was intimidation, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Of course it was. Yeah.
But what did he say?
He said he often, maybe if a lad was badly stuck, he'd put him in his own car and leave him up. Leitrim was a very... If you got to Leitrim, you were all right. Say, I was done tidy. And do you remember all of that stuff that went on?
I do, of course.
Leitrim was... Nearly everybody in Leitrim was a supporter, you know.
Yeah. And Pat, your brother, used,
aye,
you
it's to only, them up. It's only up the road to Leitrim there. And he dropped them off at a safe house up there.
Did he? So was he a sympathiser? Or was
no, he was just fear. Just he had to do it.
He was asked to do it. Wow, and so he risked his life to do that.
Well, the guards would know him, and he'd be safe enough that hardly ever bother checking him, and that's what the proof was new too, that you were safe enough to go with him, because he was, you know, he was known by the guards and the theatre, he's all right, you know.
But then he never thought of going in and telling the guards what he did, or...
Well, I'd say, no, he wouldn't do that, no, he wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
He'd be too much afraid. You could get burned out or anything, you know. Yeah. He was living there and he had four small children at the time. So it was tough now.
So he was forced into the position that he was in.
Yeah, he had no other option but...
Yeah.
You were going to stay there, live there.
So a lot of your family members were affected?
Affected, yeah.
Is he still alive?
No, he's dead. But the wife's still alive.
Is she?
Mm.
Well, I'd love to talk to her sometime.
I don't think now she'd... She was great up till a couple of weeks ago, and didn't she fall and break her hip? She was in a nursing home in Calvin. So...
Yeah.
I don't think she'd... She's kind of mixed up now anyway. She just... But up till that, she was a Donegal woman, and she could talk Irish here.
Yeah.
And she was very clear, but now it's a pity she's just gone... Not as clear, unless she gets over this, you know.
I hope she does, yeah. And your other brother who had his car and his Jeep and his trailer stolen.
They're dead now.
They're all dead now?
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe if this woman recovers, it would be nice to meet her. Or
She was a teacher as well, you know.
Was she? Did she teach?
She taught on the two sides. She got married and went to live in Northern Ireland, and then they didn't let her teach down there, and she had to go to England to do a course there to teach in Northern Ireland. She came from Donegal to a local school here to teach, and then she got married and moved down to the north, and then she couldn't teach in the north because, first of all, when she got married here, she couldn't teach, because when you got married, they wouldn't let you teach in the south. It was at that time. And
say that again now. If you were educated,
sure, Kieran Maguire's Kieran Maguire's mother now. When they got married, she wasn't allowed to teach. You know,
in the north, yeah.
In the south here.
In the south,
aye. Once you got married, you weren't allowed to.
Oh yes, it was the marriage ban, of course. And so, what was her maiden name? Married to your brother,
she was Quinn. She was from Fintown in Donegal.
And what was her first name?
She was Grace.
Grace Quinn. Oh, and was she? Yeah, and nothing to Sean Quinn and
no, Tony Gall Quinns. You know, I was telling you about experience the way they were able, when the British Army put down girders to block the road. They were fit to blow them off, just
yeah.
But I was coming up, and I had a bicycle out this time, and I was coming up, and I heard the bomb going off. I knew it was at the border. But I was going on up, and the smoke was just rising up. And a local man came out of the house, and he said, "You know, that's a bomb at the border, and my wife's just gone up on the bicycle. I wonder, maybe she got caught in it. I'll go up along with you." And he was very easy going. He looked round. There's no sign of her. He says, "She must have got away." And the smoke was still rising up the road with it.
And so she was the one who actually put the...
No, you see, she was only going into the town for messages.
Yes.
And the boys, the provost was after them down. And in the middle of the day, they done this, you know.
As bold as hell, wasn't it? Yeah. But she could have easily have had a leg blown
she
off.
She could have been killed, you know.
Yeah.
She was that close to it.
Imagine.
Or I could have been. I was only quarter of a mile down the road now when the bang went off.
Yeah.
And it was about 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah. But you got used to all these explosions.
Oh, you got used to it all. You wouldn't bat an eyelid at all.
Imagine. Yeah. It's just... But
the queues that was at the... See, they dug in a big checkpoint, and they had a pile of sandbags, and they had lookout posts and everything. And they kept you there... And then you had there were young soldiers that came over from England. They were all Englishmen, as I tell you before, maybe from Africa, and they couldn't understand what was going on at all. It was Ireland, they thought it was Ireland where they were, and it was Ireland where we were, and they were fighting, and they didn't know what we were fighting about, you know. And you'd have to forgive them, because they didn't realise what was happening. Yeah. That was the British Army, you know.
Yeah. Who were the worst, the British Army or the RUC?
Now the RUC won great. The RUC, I was working just opposite Kinnolly Barrack, and I was building a small little dairy, and there was a fella, he had this big century dog, and he used to be exercising him up and down the road by me every day. And when I got up on the, it was exciting at that time, got up on the bike to go home, he was up the road about 100 yards, and he stopped me and asked me my name, and that kind of intimidation.
Really?
That's what we're at. Pure
intimidation.
And I remember I came back home here, and I was looking at the news, and I seen my little dairy was blown up, was blown to bits where I was building it.
Go away.
So they had come along in the meantime and put a bomb on it. They used to go down the road, you see, and they'd make someone drive a tractor down there, and you had to do it, and you might jump and shout to the boys in the barracks that there was a bomb and run through it. Yeah, everyone would look out for themselves.
So there was a time when you just, as you say, you kept your head down, you said nothing because you were afraid that you'd get caught from either side. Yeah. But do you feel good now about the fact that you can talk about these things and nobody's going to come after you?
We can talk out now, and of course, a lot of the people's dead now, you know.
Yeah.
If you live long enough, they'll be all dead.
So you feel much, you couldn't say what you're telling me now,
no,
10
not,
years ago.
Not 10 years ago, no, no. But it was...
But when you had your little dairy blown up that you were putting together, who blew that up now?
You see, the IRA came down with a bomb just...
They left
the bomb on the road in front of the barrack. But the barrack was so well fortified. See, with sandbags and everything, it wouldn't have much effect. There was no sandbags or mace, it blew everything away.
And you were working there at the time?
I was.
You weren't actually there at the time?
No, I was going home. I was just come home and I seen it on the 9 o'clock news.
And you saw your place going up? And that was your property, your place?
No, I was building for a local man. That was,
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he happened to be an orange man anyway.
Yeah.
So we hadn't, maybe hadn't that much sympathy for him.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's extraordinary the how these stories can go around. But, you know, kind of, there was that kind of, no matter what you're saying, there was support for the provosts. I mean, you felt they were helping you in some way, did you?
Well, the enemy was Northern Ireland, and they were fighting against them. You know, you had no sympathy nearly for what they got down there.
But you are a Northern Irelander because you were born there.
Born,
you grew up there.
Yeah, and I was 26 years of age when I left there. Yeah. And I was on that committee that had to make sure that your voting thing was, that your name was on. We knew everybody that was on the voting list, and you had to look in case that they'd claim that such a person was away, went away to England when at whatever period, and they may have been back. But there was one funny one. There was a family beside us, and she was had a baby. And she was a Bridget Gillies, and she died. But then, in a couple of years after, they had another baby, and they called it Bridget Gillies again. You see, and then, sure, when the one that died came to be voting age for 21 at that time, so she had a vote. And this Bridget Gillies, who was only 18, went down and voted in spite of them, because she was voting on the... and the dead sister's name, you know. Funny things like that happen.
As you say, there's a way around everything, isn't there? But
yeah. But even the priest, now, even the curate that was there in Ginnall, he'd have a meeting and he'd be interested in keeping the records right, you know, that everyone had to have a vote and everything, you know.
Yeah.
He was interested in fighting his cause too, you know.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, he was making sure that he'd give the look after the...
His own flock,
I suppose, yeah. Listen, we better go down. Listen, thank you very much. Can I come back and talk to you again at some stage? We better go now.